Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to today's episode. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin. I'm here today with my guest, Kelly Campbell of Agency Growth Consultant, LLC, who will be discussing life-work integration and what that means. Kelly is a conscious leadership coach helping creative and technology leaders transform life and grow their agencies. The former owner of a cause marketing agency for 14 years, she focuses on a framework called the six P's: personal development, purpose, positioning, people, pipeline, and profitability. She is a keynote speaker at leadership conferences across the country. She has been featured in the New York Times, Woman Entrepreneur, The Startup on Medium, and Forbes.com, for which she most recently became a member of the Forbes Business Council. She is currently authoring her first book on leadership as a healing journey, and she is the host of Thrive, your agency resource. Thanks so much for joining us today, Kelly. That is such an impressive list of accomplishments.
Julia, thank you so much. It is definitely my pleasure. And I've been actually really looking forward to this conversation for a while.
That's awesome. So I'd love to hear a little about your story. So you started an agency originally, and then you worked in that for 14 years, and then you transitioned into coaching. So tell us about that story.
I think my story in terms of starting the agency isn't very different from most people. You know, we start as practitioners, agency owners, right? We start as practitioners. For me, it was graphic design and then getting into some web design and development. And you start learning different skills and things along the way. Really got into search engine optimization and, you know, all the things that are necessary to run what we now call a digital agency, although I think even that term is passé already, because everything is digital. But back then in 2002, you know, we didn't call it necessarily digital marketing. We called it website design and development and email marketing and all of that. So starting out as a practitioner, being in a full-time role in corporate America where I just did not fit in. I did not understand the culture. None of it resonated with me. So I went out on my own, found some clients, built up a practice myself, took on some contractors, you know, the whole story. This, I think everybody kind of has that same similar story, right?
Yeah.
Or very similar to it. And then I ran that agency for 14 years. For the first 7 years, I had no idea what the hell I was doing. again, as most people don't. And there is no manual for it, right? So you just kind of, like I say, grope your way along. You make a bunch of mistakes. You try not to make them more than twice.
You do a lot of Googling.
A lot of Googling, exactly. And, you know, you try to pretend that you have all the answers. On the outside. So to the rest of the world, it looks like you're doing great, but internally, that is not necessarily the case. And we need to level set there and have some super honest conversations about that, because that's going to lead into what we talk about with work-life integration.
Yeah, definitely.
So I ended up selling that agency in 2016. And the core of it was that I had, from the external perspective, I had a really successful agency. I had a great team. We hit all the metrics that everyone actually looks at, but, you know, maybe should be thinking about differently. Great names on our client roster, you know, all of these different things. And we had focused in and narrowed down on cause marketing. So nonprofits, foundations, CSR initiatives, corporate social responsibility, as well as some educational organizations. So feeling really good about the work that we did in the world, the impact that we were having, all of those things were just really hitting, right? But internally, I was so unhappy, and it was impacting my marriage. It was impacting my health, my wellness, my well-being, just every single thing, you know, that you can think of. And so I made the decision to sell it. I was able to sell it, which is, you know, is sort of, I guess, a bit of an anomaly in the agency world. A lot of people have the idea that they want to sell, but it's incredibly difficult to sell an agency. You really have to be completely extracted from the entire day-to-day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into that from the valuation standpoint. You know, and I don't have kids, so this really was kind of like selling my teenage daughter in a weird way, right?
Yeah.
So super attached. Super attached, super emotional. It was like I couldn't even look at, once the transition happened, I couldn't even look at their website for like probably a year and a half to 2 years. Wow. All of the swag that we had, the clothes that had our logo embroidered on them, right? Jackets and shirts and all these different things. I had some kind of like, I don't know, existential moment where I was like, I'm going to put all of these into like a donation drop-off bin because I can't even look at it, right?
Yeah.
So it was very heavy for me. Mm-hmm. I took some time to figure out, well, what am I going to do next? Because I was 36 years old when I sold the company. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I've got expertise. I've got experience specifically in the agency realm. And maybe I can help other people to not make the same mistakes that I did.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what led me into consulting. Pretty quickly into that journey, I realized that there was way more to the story and that my real pull was helping agency leaders and owners to become more self-aware, mm-hmm. to take better care of themselves, and to really develop their sense of conscious leadership, right?
Yeah.
Help them to become the leaders that they wish that they were, mm-hmm. and that their employees would want to look up to and want to be mentored by. So yeah. That requires a lot of reprogramming, deprogramming, unlearning, you know, even going so far as to talking about healing trauma from yeah. our childhood or our past experiences that we've had. Because we bring all of that into our leadership role, right?
Right.
So if we don't deconstruct those things, then the organization is actually stifled. And it's really the person at the top who sort of dictates the culture and all of that. Doesn't have to be that way, but that is the way that agencies are typically set up. So that's really the focus of, yeah, that's sort of the focus of my coaching practice at this point. So I call it, it is called trauma-informed leadership coaching. And I specialize in creative and technology agencies.
Yeah. That's so unique and interesting. And yeah, I love how you really just pull together like the whole person as an entrepreneur, and you really, you know, you work to help them work through those limiting beliefs and that's limiting right. mindset and all that. So yeah, that's so cool. That's awesome. So I'd love to delve into our topic now, which is life-work integration. So, you know, you hear the term work-life balance all the time. How is this different?
So I believe that work-life balance, if you just look at the way that that's constructed, that phrase, mm-hmm. you're putting work first, right off the bat.
Yeah. Yeah.
So many people talk about work-life balance. It really needs to be life-work integration because life comes first, right?
Yes.
Work is secondary. And we're not talking about balance. We're talking about integration. When I think of balance, I think of a scale, like maybe like a scale of justice or something, or like a yeah. physical scale where you're weighing things.
Yeah.
And
like
if you
balance game, like you're going to fall off.
That's right. Exactly. And so if you put life on one side and work on the other, what happens is if you take on more work to the point where that balance, that side of the balance scale gets pulled downward because there's more work on that side. That means that there's less life, right? More, less living, less play, less joy, less all of that.
Yeah.
And the flip side, right? If you live more, then you work less, mm-hmm. or you don't prioritize work, or you don't make as much money, right? There's all of these things that we think about when I hear work-life balance, it actually makes me cringe. And I always turn that conversation around to say, well, it's actually life-work integration, because what we want to do is we want to be integrated beings. mm-hmm. right? We want to live a life, and part of that life is relationships and our careers and our families and the things that we're passionate about and our play and joy and all those other things, right? Like, that's what makes us a full, rich, fully expressed human.
Yes.
So work is really just one component of life. And so we really need to be integrating that into, you know, how we're showing up and how we're living on a daily basis. So that's, to me, that's the difference. Lots of people use the terminology, and I'm going to correct it till the day I die.
Yeah. I love it. Well, no, it makes so much sense. So I feel like a lot of us, we understand that on a level, even if we can't express that. But then, you know, day-to-day work kicks in, you know, we've got a million jobs on the go, a million emails flooding in, you're busy running a team, you're overwhelmed with work. How do you find that way that you can, I'm using the word balance because I don't know another word,
it's okay.
But yeah.
integration, right.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you find that integration? How do you find a way to sort of manage that?
So this is sort of like the the big question, right? I think for me, you have to start before. There's a question that comes before this question.
Okay.
And the question there is, do you believe inherently that in order to succeed, you have to work hard, you have to kill yourself, you have to put in so many hours or else you're not going to succeed? If that is your core belief because of how you were raised or things that were modeled for you, then you are going to ask the question, well, how do I fit this in to my work? How do I fit this into my daily thing? Right.
Okay.
And so that's where you have to start because, you know, I have a client, for example, who grew up in a farming family. They own an agency, she and her husband, and they grew up in a farming family where, like, hard work, there was nothing else other than hard work, right? Like, it was wake up in the morning, feed the chickens, like literally farm family life, and working hard, that blue collar mentality of like, I'm lazy if I take a day off, or there are no such things as, you know, sick days, or, you know, things along those lines. It's like the correlation for them was around this idea of, I have to work hard in order to be successful.
Yeah.
And what that means is, like, I have to work hard no matter what. And there's no opportunity for me to say, well, maybe I could find a way to work smarter, not mm-hmm. as hard. And then therefore that opens up a possibility where I can start to value self-care and things like that. So I'll start with that as the first question. Like, maybe that's the curiosity for your audience, is like, ask yourself that question. How would you answer that? You know, what is your belief around success and the amount of effort that's required, quote unquote, to achieve it?
Yeah.
And then if you would, regardless of what your answer is, the way in which we can integrate it is the same way that we do anything else that we actually prioritize and care about. We create space for it in our lives the way that we would anything else, right? So mm-hmm. a lot of people will say, well, if you wait in order to be financially secure enough to have a baby, then you'll never have a baby, right?
Yeah.
People have babies all the time and they figure it out, and they may not think that they are financially ready, but you figure it out, right?
Yeah.
So I think that there's something here where if I prioritize my mental health and my well-being and my self-care and all those things, put it on your calendar, right? Mm-hmm. If there's simply just breaks that you need to create in your day, I have a recurring calendar on a recurring event on my calendar that I go for a walk from 12 to 1 every single day. It's blocked out of Calendly. Like, nobody touches that. That's my time.
Yeah. That's so smart.
Now, I have the opportunity or the option, if I want to, if I need to fit something in, a phone call, for example, or some crisis happens with a coaching client, yes, I can use that time, but I'm certainly not going to be sitting at my desk. I'm going to take that as a walk-in call. But that happens very rarely, right?
Yeah.
There are other things that you can do, not only for yourself as the leader, but also for the rest of your team, because, you know, as leaders, we get into this situation where we are unknowingly modeling the behavior that we expect. So yes. If you're the first one into the office and the last one to leave and you're working through lunch and you're stressed out and you barely have time to go pee or eat lunch or whatever, because I'm basically describing 90% of agency leaders, right?
Totally.
What are you unknowingly or inadvertently telling your team or communicating your team through those actions? You're communicating that's kind of what you expect from them. Mm-hmm. Even though you would never say that and you probably don't even believe that, that's what you're communicating to them through your body language, your actions, things along those lines.
Yeah.
So it's really important to have the self-awareness to say, okay, well, if this is important to me, then I'm going to do it. If it's not as important to me, could I actually make these changes that we're talking about for the benefit of my team so that I'm at least modeling better behavior for them so that they don't leave, they don't get burned out, they don't get so overwhelmed.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, exactly.
Regardless of who you're doing it for, it needs to be done. So another example is at my former agency, we had half day Fridays, and we did that in the summer where the second half of every Friday, they had off. They just left the office, right? That was their free time, PTO, in addition to all the vacations and whatever else they needed. Mm-hmm. But that was during the summer. During the non-summer seasons, the half day Fridays were in the office, but they were able to spend their time doing whatever they wanted. Meaning maybe I want to take a course. I want to learn some new skill. Maybe there's a project that I want to work on. Maybe I want to work on something that's a personal project, right? Whatever it was, it didn't actually matter. But that space, we're talking about being in the creative and media and technology space, especially in the creative field, you need space in order to allow the innovation, allow the ideas to flow through, right? It's really hard to be creative when your days are just filled with like meetings and deadlines and this and that. Where's the room for you to be able to kind of synthesize and make connections and think in a different way? Right.
Yeah. So that's so true. And that's something I think about actually quite often. Yeah, it's so easy. Your time is eaten up. You're so busy and you don't have time to get creative and think of these, you know, outside the box ideas. So how do you make that time? What are your sort of suggestions for that?
I mean, you prioritize it. You put it on your calendar, just like it's a client meeting. It's not a thing that can be moved. You pretend that it's a non-negotiable. You pretend it's your most valuable client and you would never dream of moving that.
Yeah.
Now, what that also communicates is that this is something that you're prioritizing. You know, in the agency world, we are essentially selling the talent of our people, mm-hmm. right? Like our people are sort of our product in a way, if you want to talk about it from that perspective. So if we make sure that we take care of them, then that automatically in a circular sort of money follows value circular system, mm-hmm. that will turn around and actually hit your bottom line in a positive way, right? So valuing people means that they stay longer, means that they're more fulfilled. It means that they're going to be more productive because you're supporting them in all these ways. You're prioritizing their mental health. You're prioritizing their ability to have that creative time. Mm-hmm. You're giving them the leadership development or other kind of continuous learning or other development that they need, mm-hmm. so that they feel like they're growing as individuals, right? Like think about you as an employee or anybody listening, think about you as an employee. Why would you stay in an organization? And what would be the factors that would contribute to you wanting to leave that organization, right? Mm-hmm. Do I feel safe and comfortable to express myself in this organization? Am I being supported? Am I being mentored? Do I have enough time off? Am I super stressed out, or, you know, does the leadership understand that I need you know, a little bit more from a PTO standpoint or mental wellness days. Yeah. So all of these things factor in. And so you really want your people to stay longer because it costs you a ton of money to bring in new people.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Recruiters and training and this and that. So it's actually helpful to your bottom line 100% of the time if you value your employees and you really take care of them.
Absolutely.
So okay. You prioritize it. You put it on the calendar, put it all on the calendar.
Right? Put everything on the calendar that you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so I feel so much of entrepreneurship is, you know, you've really got that grind, that hustle mentality. What do you say to that? Like, what do your days kind of look like?
What do I say to hustle and grind mentality? I say no.
Yeah.
I say no. I say that's really antiquated thinking. Mm-hmm. It's the cause of overwhelm culture and burnout as the norm.
Yeah.
Right. I think that the younger generations now, I think, do a really good job of setting boundaries for themselves and advocating for themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of like older, I'm like, you know, my age and up, a lot of people that own agencies that are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, mm-hmm. you know, it's easy to say, oh, these kids are so entitled or they want everything. You know what? Why are you so resistant to the messaging that they're, or the self-advocacy that they're presenting? In yeah. my opinion, they're saying my mental health and my well-being matter.
Yeah.
I want to show up fully. I want to give you 100%. Mm-hmm. Help me do that. Give me my time off. Give me my space. Give me, right?
Yeah.
When they are that boundary to say, no, I'm not going to work on the weekends. No, I'm not going to answer an email at 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. What they're doing is they're saying, I value myself.
Yeah.
But it's been historically at odds with or in opposition to the hustle and culture and grind mentality.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, totally.
I say no to it. It's not sustainable. That's the best way I can say it. It's not yeah. sustainable. So, you know, how could you create, the better question is, how can you create a sustainable culture, mm-hmm. a sustainable workplace, right? Even yeah. if it's remote.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
You're really, if it's remote.
Yeah. Yeah. You're playing the long game, you know, when you take care of yourself and That's you prioritize right. yourself. Anyone sort of working in that hustle mentality, you know, you might get further ahead in the short term and then, you know, you're dealing with burnout and then you've got all this time that you've got to recuperate. So yeah. Yeah. It really does pay off in the long run to take care of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the question, right? If you want to hustle and grind and do all those, you know, all those things, then you should also ask yourself if you're willing to have a business that has a really short runway. That's
yeah.
potentially going to be developing a reputation for overwhelm and burnout. That's not going to attract great talent. Mm-hmm. It's going to attract more, you know, people who, well, we won't even get into that. That's a whole nother conversation, but it's just, it's not sustainable. And it's, you're more likely to have a business that's not thriving. Mm-hmm. And never going to reach its potential. And so if you're yeah. okay with those things, then keep hustling and grinding. But if you really are building something for longevity and impact and also just in general, taking care of your fellow humans who you're employing, mm-hmm. then this is the way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. You owe it to them to be a responsible role model.
You got it.
Yeah. So do you have clients that come to you who are in burnout?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. They come to me for different reasons, but I would say 75% probably come because as the agency leader, they are just completely overwhelmed, not sure how to get out of the day-to-day weeds, and really wanting to understand what about their own beliefs or behaviors is keeping them in that rut.
Okay. So you help them kind of work through those beliefs that they have and find that balance.
Yeah. And a lot of
not
it,
balance.
I mean, this is not balance. That's what we'll call the show. Not balance. A lot of that comes down to this inherent belief that, you know, again, historically, we've been told that leaders have to have all the answers, they can't ask for support. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they can do it better themselves than someone else on their team could. And so a mm-hmm. lot of it comes down to underlying issues of distrust, or, mm-hmm. you know, not being able to delegate for fear that, you know, the company might lose a client if the employee says something wrong in an email. Right.
Right.
So there's a scarcity mindset. Everything comes down to like a fear-based mentality of I'm going to lose this, or something is going to crumble mm-hmm. if it's not being done by me.
Right? Okay.
And that's entirely egoic if you think about it, because yes, you're probably great at your job or at your practice. Mm-hmm. You may not be great as a leader if you hold those beliefs.
Interesting.
The good news is that all those things can be unlearned and deprogrammed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, you just have to basically unlearn that scarcity mindset, that constant worry that sort of consumes a lot of entrepreneurs, just worrying about the day-to-day, and just kind of develop a more positive outlook, basically.
Well, yes, it's about positivity, but I'm careful with like a fake positivity culture.
Okay.
Because really what it's about is healing the root cause of what led you to have that scarcity mindset.
Okay. Right?
So there was something that happened, or, you know, either as a one-time event or over the course of time at mm-hmm. some prior point in your life that led you to believe that, you know, you are going to lose something, or, right? Like there's something that happened. And so I feel that my job is to help you identify what that thing is so that we can change and rewrite that narrative mm-hmm. so that it then naturally becomes, oh, I can let this go, right? Like I can release whatever that traumatic thing is. And now I can start slowly trusting my team and delegating and getting myself out of the weeds, and then focusing more on the larger vision of the organization, putting the right people in the right places, trusting my own intuition. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Like the benefits of healing those past traumatic things, mm-hmm. the shadow, we might call it, mm-hmm. That has such far-reaching effects that positively impact you as the individual, as the agency leader, but then also think about the ripple effect to all of your employees.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's so cool what you do. You're like a counselor coach to agency owners. So it's really unique, and it's really needed, I think.
I think so too.
So where do you see your business in 5 years' time?
5 years. In 5 years, well, I'll say it this way. I don't really do any consulting engagements anymore.
Okay.
So maybe I'll take on one of those per year. I'm in the middle of one right now, but I am pretty much exclusively focused on coaching.
Okay.
I'm very selective with my clients, and I love my clients. Mm-hmm. I would say in 5 years, I'll probably be doing the same thing, although at that point, I probably will be scaling back from the coaching to focus on my other business that I own, which is called Consciousness Leaders.
Okay.
So I don't know if you want to dive into that for a second or.
Yeah. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that. Absolutely.
So that was, it's essentially, it is a representation agency.
Okay.
Where I represent people who, just like me, and lots of other folks who are coaches, consultants, workshop facilitators, authors, and speakers. Mm-hmm. Those are all of the categories that we represent, but these people are all focused on some facet of conscious leadership, right? So we might have someone who focuses on empathetic leadership or accountability in leadership. We might have people who focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion consulting, sustainability or social impacts, right? CSR stuff. Yep. So all across the board, anything that prioritizes people and planet over or as part of profit, not as, you know, not profit above those things. That's the sort of baseline of conscious leadership. So anything that falls underneath that, we've been talking about, you know, overwhelm and burnout. So there are, you know, employees that are dealing with stress and people who are dealing with grief, especially, you know, in this pandemic era. So coaches and other folks who can help people through that in the workplace, all that kind of support. Those are the folks that I represent through Consciousness Leaders, and essentially pair them with organizations who are in need of those services.
That's so interesting. Oh, that's awesome. Cool. Well, thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah. Thanks for indulging me.
Yeah. So if our listeners would like to get in touch with you, what would be the best way for them to reach you?
Sure. My website is just klcampbell.com, spelled just like the soup.
Okay.
So that's the best way to get in touch with me, and my phone number and email are right at the top of the site.
Okay, perfect. I'll put a link to that in the description.
Thank you.
Alrighty. Well, we're getting ready to wrap up here in a minute, but first we have the Fast Five, which are five rapid fire questions.
Oh God, I love these. Okay.
So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
Ooh, I'm going to go with the most recent one, which is How to Do the Work by Nicole LaPera.
Okay. And what does your morning routine look like?
So typically get up, meditate, maybe go for a walk or a bike ride, make some really good coffee, like an oat milk latte, have some breakfast, and then I sit down and start working at 10:30.
Okay. How long do you meditate for?
About 30 minutes.
That's awesome. I'm always curious. Is there a CEO that you follow or study?
There are several. I guess the one that, are you asking for to highlight one?
If you have one that you'd like to highlight.
I often talk about Dan Price from Gravity Payments as a CEO who I think really, really puts his money where his mouth is. And he has implemented something several years ago where he dropped his salary so that everyone in his company could have a starting salary of $70,000 per year.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I think, you know, when you're talking about sort of making sure that equity is part of your culture, I think he does a great job of that.
Yeah, that's interesting, because in my last episode, my guest said the same thing. They said Dan Price,
really?
And they referenced that as well. He's making a difference. He's inspiring people.
Yep.
What is your favorite online tool?
Favorite online tool. I mean, I use LinkedIn a lot. I really like a couple of tools that bridge or kind of append to LinkedIn.
Okay.
So sometimes I will recommend and use LeadIQ. Which is basically pulling information from folks that you want to get their contact information for without necessarily connecting with them. Sort of like a prospecting tool.
Yeah.
And I also like Crystal, which is, I think, crystalknows.com. And that's sort of like personality assessment information on people that you might want to reach out to. So
okay.
I like those two specifically for business development and prospecting, not necessarily for myself, because I don't do that, but for the business development aspect of the coaching that I do with agencies.
Okay. And then last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
I wish that I knew how important it was to prioritize health and well-being.
Yes, such a good one. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and share your expertise on life-work integration. This has been super interesting, and I'm so glad that we got to chat today.
Julia, thank you so much. The pleasure was all mine.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.